Welcome to Kosher Cravings. It's a new year, a new name, Kosher Cravings, but the same old people. I'm Adrian Bugatti, and I'm in studio today with Sharon Lurie, and we're going to talk about starting a kitchen and what do you really need in your kitchen for kosher, as well as some shortcuts and some easy tips and tricks just to get you through busy weeks and busy days. So, welcome back for the year, Shah.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to be here again.
Yeah. So great. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully the new time slot suits everybody. I'm loving it. So we'll see how that goes. And we're just talking about getting the kitchen going. And, you know, people freak out when you go kosher kitchen and they go, oh, it's so expensive. You need so many things. But the truth is that a kitchen really needs the basics. You need, well, for me, I don't know about you, I need two absolutely decent knives, one proper chef's knives and one small enough for like things like tomatoes and smaller vegetables that you can cut, because cutting a green bean with a big chef knife is a little bit ridiculous. Four-sided box grater, I don't know, and decent cutting boards. So we've spoken in the past, I know, about the need for the cutting boards. And one of the things about cutting boards for a hygiene purpose thing is you do need, especially in the meat side, you need one for your raw meat and your raw chicken, and then one for the cooked stuff or the vegetables. I have a set of four for meat and milk, even though it's not necessary. I just bought it as a set, and it's a small set. It's not those big chef sets, which I have to admit, I do have those big boards as well. For when I'm doing big meals, but just for the everyday when it's cut down, when somehow we land up with, instead of six people to feed, I've only got two, the small boards are better. And I've got, like you do as well, for raw and for cooked or fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know.
I actually went down to a place, I can't remember the name of it in town. And I actually got a huge sheet of plastic, mm-hmm. and they cut it down for me. Or you can cut it down yourself to whatever size you want.
Nice.
And get a knife, make it a little hot,
old
knife.
Yeah.
And then you just cut it down.
Yeah.
Draw where you want the size. And it actually works out. And they're much cheaper, and they are smoother.
Yeah.
I find that the boards today,
The chef boards are all dipples.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. And I don't like that.
Yeah.
But we're talking about how to set up for a kosher kitchen.
Yeah.
And as you said, everybody goes, oh, kosher kitchen. Oh my God, there's four of everything.
Yeah.
No. It doesn't have to be four of everything in the beginning. I mean, to start off, have two of everything, meat and milk.
Yeah.
Okay. And you don't have to buy 12 of everything, but more often than not, you're going to get it as a wedding present anyway.
Yeah.
But I know that with Pesach, for me, it was wonderful because I used to lock up the cupboards and I used to go down to Durban for Pesach.
Oh, okay.
I would spend the whole of Pesach there, so it was wonderful. Mm. And over the years, I've inherited all the Pesach stuff from my mother, from my mother-in-law, and now, over many years later, I've got my cupboard is full. And you know what? If the plates don't match on Pesach, it's doesn't matter.
Yeah.
No.
I got lucky because my mother went kosher before we got married, and we always had the family, and it was a huge family. So I've got a set of 18 of everything for meat. So I've got the matching stuff, but I also inherited from Ian's mother and his baba. They had so much stuff that myself and my sister-in-law have both inherited stuff. And I've got the most beautiful dinnerware for Pesach. And I've put it for Pesach specifically because I want to use it, but it's so old and so irreplaceable that I don't want to use it every day. And you can't stick it in the dishwasher. So it's Pesach. But I think it's just people need to remember you need two of the basics. Yeah, you need a meat and a milk bowl for mixing, one of each size. You don't need a set of five. Measuring cups. Are you baking or not? If you're not baking, the basic measuring cups are fine. Your basic measuring spoons are fine. Get a jug that does that rather than a set of cups if you want. I do advise usually getting a glass jug, because if you do have the dishwasher, and even if you're washing by hand, it comes off the plastic, the writing, so you don't know how much you've got now. So for me, the glass jug is better. And it's not going to melt when you stick it in the microwave with your honey or your butter, which has happened to me more than once, right in the beginning.
Dark chocolate.
Yes. Yeah, you forget, you put it in for too long and you know, it melts. But I think that is an important thing, is starting off small. I remember when we started off for Pesach, I actually bought cheap plastic milk stuff because it was just two of us.
Yeah.
And there was no need for, we hardly had any milk, and we didn't have visitors for milk.
Exactly. So do you know that my Pesach milk is such an old Okerok
glass? Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
I've still got.
But we, as you say, I mean, when do I ever have milk? Maybe the butter on matzo, the salt.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. But as you say, I've got maybe six milk, milk things, six milk knives and forks. I mean, and
that's it.
40-odd years later.
Exactly. And it's not necessary.
And you know what? I use paper plates as well over Pesach.
Yeah.
So, you know, we all get into a panic. Oh, four of everything.
Yeah.
No.
And sorry if we're scaring you about talk of Pesach, but it is coming up.
but yes. First.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's important that people understand that they don't need everything all at once.
Correct. And that's an important thing.
Yeah.
Prioritize. I mean, what you have in your kitchen is obviously going to be a lot different to what I have. I mean, I have an obsession with knives.
Yes.
But I think you also do.
Yeah. No, I've got kitchen gadgets.
I've got a Kenwood chef for Pesach that is over 45, maybe even 50 years old from my mother. That's
Mine died.
Just twice. Just for 8 days of the year. So it hasn't been used that much. But, I mean, there's just, as I say, prioritize. I mean, my daughter doesn't need a Kenwood chef.
No.
Why?
Because mom
made me a cake.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, this is it. And for Pesach, I've got the handheld blender.
Right.
Mixer.
Mixer, yes.
And then I've got a Kenwood shredder, the proper, what were the magic mixers, I think they were called.
Yes.
I don't know what it's called. Because 90% of my stuff I'm doing anyway is meat. I'm almost never doing dairy over Pesach.
Yeah.
So I really needed like a minimal thing. My cakes are dairy-free and they're made in tin foil trays. I don't have a baking tin for Pesach.
Yes.
I've got, I think, two baking trays just to make the biscuits that I do make. And those are actually quite new. We lived for years without Pesach biscuits until I found the matzah crack recipe. But even that, like even during the year, my baking stuff is minimal because I don't do a lot of baking. So I've got muffin tins. I've got one muffin tray for meat and two for milk because I do make more milk than meat for muffins. But the truth is it could be either because I don't use milk in my muffin mix.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to use oil, water, or soy milk anyway, so that we can eat it at any time. But
most people today do parv cakes.
I think people who are learning for kosher have to learn that almond milk and soy milk in baking are absolutely
coconut
fun.
Milk. I know you don't like coconut. I love coconut milk in my. It just gives it a rich, lovely texture and flavor.
I'll use it in curry, but otherwise not really. It's not my
thing. Try it in cake. You'll be amazed.
Yeah. listen, my mother, when we started going kosher, and that's like, I mean, about 40 years ago, she learned to make her chocolate birthday cake with rooibos tea.
Ah.
They taught to use rooibos tea instead of, so, you know, you just need to learn to adapt and not panic about what are you going to do when you're first changing over? You've decided to go kosher or you've just gotten married and decided you want a kosher home. So you are starting from scratch. That I think you need to decide what is it you are likely to eat more of, meat or milk. And I know a family, they literally have breakfast bowls and a couple of mugs because that is the only dairy they have. And even that is like very minimal.
Yeah, it's like us as well. They only eat dairy, really.
Yeah, so even their lunch, you know, they'll serve meat or fish at lunch and then at supper. So what do they need milk plates for? Mm-hmm. This is Adrian Bugatti and Sharon Lurie, and we're talking kosher cravings and new kitchens.
You know what I actually wanted to talk about was we hinted on cutting boards and chopping boards. I think it's very important to mention here about cross-contamination.
Oh, absolutely.
How important it is to keep those boards clean.
Yeah.
How try and avoid wooden boards. I mean, you can use a wooden board. Like, I'm quite tall. So I put a wooden board on my table that sits permanently on the
top. On the countertop. Yeah.
On the countertop. And I just find that it's that. Then I put my boards on top of that.
Okay,
so that's basically I use it just to rise things.
Yeah.
But please, 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 please make sure that you clean. I've just come from a bout of salmonella.
Yeah.
And it's just all about keeping those, those boards clean.
And that is why we have the different colored boards for you know, setting up. And those boards are available, like the small ones, if you've got a small kitchen. Those colored boards are available as a set from Takealot, so they're not expensive at all.
And I think we need to encourage use Vim, use Miltons.
Yes.
I mean, how many of us? I still have Miltons.
Yeah, absolutely.
From my kids' baby days.
Yeah.
And I use that a lot.
It's so important. I remember when my domestic help first started working for me, when I had, I think it was my second or third. And she came in and there was a list on the wall by the sink on how to wash dishes, because I didn't, at that stage we didn't have dishwashers. And it was listed in order of how to wash is fill your basin, and we had the baby bottles first, then you did the teacups and your knives and forks, then you did your dinner plates, and only then did you do the pots and pans. Because when you are doing hygiene, you want to start from what goes directly into your mouth to what you're cooking on. And remember, your pots and pans are getting, the food and stuff is being cooked. So the heat is actually kind of cleaning them. And that's why washing dishes in hot water is so important. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you don't want to burn yourself, but that's why a dishwasher is so good as well, is because it gets to that right temperature, that very, very hot temperature. But not everybody can afford a dishwasher, and not everybody can afford two dishwashers. We got lucky, we won one. And the other one was from somebody we knew, and they'd passed, and the daughter didn't know what to do with this dishwasher. We're like, we'll take it. You know, and so we got it for like nothing. And it's just, it's been a great bonus. But it is important that you understand that when you are looking in your kitchen, never mind the cutlery and the crockery and all that kind of stuff, is the hygiene has to start first, because you can have the fanciest plates and dishes and get sick from your food because you've stored it wrong or washed something wrong. So your cutting boards, like for me, those cutting boards, especially like my ones, which aren't my big one, which is like slightly dimpled, it's scrubbed with a food safe bleach. Wooden board is only used for bread. I don't use it for anything else. And even the one I've got has got like a rack on it so that the crumbs fall through. And we take the rack out and that gets washed quite regularly. It's plastic. Mm-hmm. And then the board underneath is wiped clean. But you can't put boards in water because they do crack and break and soak. Even your carving boards. I mean, I've got mine lasted a really, really long time. But I've got those wooden carving boards, you know, with the spikes on for your meat. And cleaning around that is next to impossible. Those spikes, you use a toothbrush to get, because the meat does get in underneath, because the spikes have to be secured into the wood somehow, and that leaves a bit of a gap. And it's why you can't kosher a knife with a separate handle, is because stuff does get into those knives. So you need to, when you're washing your knives, also make sure. And it is better, where possible, to get a solid metal knife. But if you're buying like a really, really good knife, like something like a Victorinox, they're plastic handles.
Yeah. So all those beautiful bone knives that you inherited.
I did. I inherited them. The black and silver. Yeah.
And the beautiful
ivory.
Ivory. Oh.
I still got a butter knife.
I use that for
the only one left is my butter knife. But it's important that we do keep the hygiene. And that's where I wanted to talk about storing stuff in your fridge. And how long can you store it for? And where should you store it? And also defrosting. Defrosting is a big thing. And I'm a guilty culprit. I'll stick frozen chicken into a bowl of water to defrost it, especially if I've forgotten, which happens. You know.
But the best way is obviously take it out of the freezer and put it in the fridge.
Yeah. In a bowl, in the bottom of your fridge, definitely overnight. Sometimes it'll take 2 days. The reason we defrost it in the fridge is it defrosts evenly in the fridge, and even though the outside will defrost quicker than the inside, what happens is the fridge is going to keep that outside that's defrosted cold enough not to develop the salmonella bacteria. When you're defrosting it in the water, even specifically warm water, what happens is the temperature differences between the center of your chicken and the outside of your chicken, or even your meat, is going to be very different. The other thing is that this is just a little tip, and it's not a health and safety tip, is when you're cooking meat, get it to room temperature before you cook it. It won't shrink quite as badly. That's just a cooking tip. But your fish and your chicken need to be defrosted on the bottom shelf because you don't want those juices dripping down onto anything else.
Right.
And that's not a kosher issue. That is just a hygiene issue and a health and safety issue.
Sure.
So that's the thing. What tips have you got for fridge storage?
Fridge storage. Make sure that everything's covered.
Mm.
Okay, because you don't know that. I mean, you can put a salad in for 10 minutes and it can absorb
everything.
I mean, tomatoes. It can absorb.
So onions in the fridge have to be covered at all times. You aren't allowed to store. As a kosher thing, you don't store cut onions. It has to be covered. But also it stinks up your fridge if you don't cover it. Even if it's in glad wrap, it still stinks up the fridge sometimes if it's a really strong onion. I've had that where I've had it glad wrapped and it opened the fridge and all you can get is the whiff.
The onions.
Even my chopped garlic is in a tub in the fridge. But it's still often, if you don't close that lid properly, the entire fridge is now garlic. So that's a big thing. And then also when you're storing stuff, remember, heat rises, so you've got to be careful what you're storing, like your yogurts and your milks and stuff should ideally be stored near the bottom of the fridge. Obviously, if, you know, the door is a different thing, you can store it in the door, but it's still, every time you open the door, heats up and can turn your fridge, your milk go off a little quicker. So round about the middle shelf. And vegetables and stuff on the top shelf, because vegetables, once they're cut and are in either Ziploc bags or Tupperwares or plastic containers, aren't going to drip as much.
Right. But I've noticed the new fridges now have that
special crisper drawer.
So, you know, it will help, but you won't get all the drippings onto the fridge.
Yeah. And a lot of the fridges, you'll see they don't have plastic shelves. They've got glass shelves.
Yeah.
And that is a hygiene thing as well, because the glass is much easier to clean.
Well, I use mats to clean all my glass and actually even my tabletops. I mean, you walk into a doctor's room. What do you smell?
Yeah.
Mats. You have an injection. I remember my late grandpa, every time I had to have an injection, the mats on.
Yeah. Listen, I must admit, I use a food safe bleach to clean everything called Elbex.
Okay.
It's cheap and it's easy to use. I think for me, it's just because meths reminds me of my student days. And we used to often have the homeless people living in the hospitals who were alcoholics, and they would drink the meths.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of just avoid meths.
Okay.
I think it's just from that, because meths is fantastic. It's a good cleaning stuff. It's just the smell just brings back some really strong memories.
I actually had a lady in the kitchen, health and hygiene lady, and she said to me, spray with their meths.
Yeah. No, it's really fantastic.
It evaporates.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have grandchildren around, and it's like, Ma, that smell, please.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. That's okay. The kids all associate the smell of meth with granny forever, with Bobo Shah forever. You know, there's certain childhood smells that don't go away.
Oh, for sure.
But, you know, I think people have to understand washing hands.
Oh.
Do you have soap next to your sink besides the dishwashing liquid?
I have the dishwashing liquid. I have the soap. Yeah. I have Jik. I have four little things.
Yeah.
I'm really obsessed with that. And my gloves. I need my gloves.
Yeah. That's well, the gloves I use mostly for, like, if I'm doing beetroot.
Mm-hmm.
Because for some reason you can peel raw beetroot.
Yeah.
Not a problem. It doesn't stain your hands. As soon as it's cooked, your hands go purple. Really annoying. The garlic, absolutely, because you don't want your hands stinking of garlic forever.
And onion.
onion is not so bad. I don't mind. I use, you know, but also for me, I grow a lot of stuff in the garden.
Yes.
So I've got the gloves because, well, I can't call them baby marrows anymore because they're zucchinis. They are so enormous that what we're growing, it's actually ridiculous, and they grow so fast. But they've got spines and prickles on them.
Yes.
And they are sharp. So I don't have gardening gloves. I'm not a gardener. I look at the plants funny and they turn over and die. And that's the silk ones, not even the real ones. So I do use those, you know, to pick the vegetables, beautiful baby cherries and stuff like that. Nothing like being able to grow your own vegetables. And let me tell you, you can grow them on a balcony in a little box.
Absolutely.
I have a friend in Cape Town who sent me a picture recently of the most gorgeous strawberries that she's growing on her balcony. And they are. They're stunning. I mean, we're growing strawberries, but we've got to fight with the worms. you've got to catch the strawberry at the right time or it's eaten. But it's just so important that when we're bringing home vegetables as well. I know a lot of the vegetables and stuff, like the lettuce and things, unless you're buying it sort of from fresh fellas, and even then I wash it, it says washed and ready to eat. I'm not so sure about that. You know, yes. Even without having to check, it's a long time ago, a couple of years, I came home with Woolworths washed and ready to eat lettuce and found a worm in.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing such huge quantities, you can't check as carefully. And that's one of the issues, like people go, well, you can have a salad at a non-kosher restaurant. But that is one of the issues, is they're rinsing their lettuce, but they're not actually checking for insects.
Right.
So, you know, that's, you know, how it's, you know, changing things. You're listening to Adrian Bugatti and Sharon Lurie on, okay, this is Adrian Bugatti and I'm with Sharon Lurie and we're talking kosher cravings and we're setting up your kitchen, giving you a few tips to get started, some hygiene, some shortcuts, some little extra things just to get the year going properly.
I think another important thing that we have to talk about is brushes.
Oh, absolutely.
Because brushes and sponges.
Oh, yes.
Okay. And no matter how many times you think that you're using the right sponge and the right, make sure that they're color-coded.
Oh, absolutely.
Don't just buy the plain green ones and think, okay, I'll remember that.
They'll just sit on different sides.
Okay. Doesn't work like that.
Somebody's going to make a mistake.
Exactly. Yeah. Get red sponges. Get blue sponges.
Absolutely.
And get a green sponge.
And the other thing is, how often do you change your sponges? Because that is huge. Sponges, by the way, eventually, like after a month, actually have more germs in them than your toilet. So you should be changing that sponge at least once a month. If you can't do it once a month because of the costs and stuff like that, 6 weeks. But, you know, they are harboring bacteria because you've washed your pot or you've scrubbed your pot. And yes, you've rinsed out all the soap and stuff, but you're now putting it on the rack and it's still soggy and it's still got food clinging to it because what are you going to stand and scrub your scrubber? So it is important. Brushes can go a little bit longer because it's open and it's easier to clean. But I would still say every 4 months, maybe every 6 months. To do it. If you've forgotten, Pesach is always a good time to remember. But it's a year, and that's far too long.
Definitely.
So it's important. And you can buy them from these places, the bulk cleaning places. You buy a big packet, and it put it in a cupboard, and it lasts for ages. You know, every couple of months, you just need to put a note on a wall or on your phone or something to remind you to
just put it change. In your phone. I put everything in my phone.
I don't know what I would do without it. I'd be in big trouble. Big trouble.
And it's so easy. I mean, you just stick it in your phone and make sure that it beeps every time you have to do something.
That's the other thing is, for me in the kitchen, is timers.
Oh, yes.
And without your phone, I mean, I've got an actual timer. I was just given it as a gift, and I love it because you can do it backwards or forwards. So you can add time or take off time, does both. But sometimes you're not in the kitchen when that timer goes off. So having the timer on your phone, definitely a must for any kitchen. The timer is like the most important. And learning, and it's easy to Google, to learn how long to cook stuff for.
Right.
Because you've got to have your chicken at the right temperature. And please note that the kosher chickens are often pink inside because of the brining. It's not because they're not cooked. As long as the bone is not pink, you're good.
Right.
And I think the temperature of a cooked chicken is 65 degrees if you've got a thermometer.
Well, I think a thermometer is very important. Lately, I've started using my thermometer.
Oh, is it? Yes. I love my thermometer.
Oh, really? Mm. I never used to use it.
Oh, no.
I used to feel, I used to tap here, there, know that, that will take an hour.
Mm.
And a cousin of mine came in and said to me, you got to get a
I love it.
Thing. Thermometer.
So I love it. Yeah.
So I started using one.
And it is. It's a lot easier than burning your finger trying to check if your temperature is hot enough.
And it still cooks a little bit afterwards when you're doing it like a scotch fillet or something like
that. Yeah, that's it. Like Shabbos. I will take my chicken out of the oven undercooked because I know it's going in the warmer for like 3 hours.
Right.
So it's going to carry. It's not going to carry on cooking as if it was cooking. So you don't want it raw, but you do want it,
More than a third cooked.
Yeah. So, that's an important thing. And my other shortcut is using your phone to find recipes and inspiration. And we were talking about like inspiration and quick soups and quick things that you can just throw together on days where you're tired or in a hurry and you need to feed people.
You know what I found that the most important thing when you're starting out and you start reading a recipe.
Mm.
Read the whole recipe.
Oh, absolutely. Including the instructions on how to cook.
Exactly. Because it's so important. You know, you go and you open your book and you go, okay, I've got my flour, my butter, my eggs. Oh, there's something that I haven't got.
Yeah.
So make sure that whatever you're going to cook the day before you go through your book, you'll go through your recipe and you write down
For me, it's the equipment side, because often it'll tell you to do things and then it'll say in a medium pan. And then you look at the recipe and you go, hang on, this recipe is actually for 4 people, but I'm cooking for 8. Medium pan ain't going to cut it. Right. I need a big pan. So you need to look at besides your ingredients, you do need to look at
your cookware.
Wooden spoon? Absolute.
Right.
I don't know about you.
Yes.
And spend your money on decent cookware. Definitely. It's going to last you forever. I think I've got a pot. I think it's my only one left. From when I got married, it was a wedding present. So 37 years? Something like that. Yeah. You know, it's.
I've got lovely, lovely La Creuset pots.
Mm.
And I've got one that must be 60 years old.
Yeah.
That I inherited, and it's a milky one. So my macaroni cheese is made in that pot.
Yeah.
And I want to tell you, it doesn't age.
No.
It's too fantastic.
I know you've got the same as me. You've got the enamel, but you've got an enamel dinner service. I've got like the enamel double boiler, my yellow and green that I inherited, and 2 pots that I inherited from Ian's mother or grandmother, actually.
Yes.
And they are still in really, really good condition. So if you're getting good quality, you're going to have it last really good time, like a good long time. And that's what you want. Most of mine, the pots are fine, but because I'm on gas now for the last 20 years, the plastic handles are kind of not doing it. But also be careful when you're buying pots that your handles are separate to your pot, because if they're one piece, the handles get extremely hot and very quickly.
Yeah, you can actually get like rubber things. Yeah, those
little,
that you can.
I do have those, but I often forget to take them out.
Me too, me too. Start cooking, to grab it.
Yeah, like, you know me, I'm kitchen gadget thing, so if it came out, I probably got it.
But I think also another important thing that we have to do is talk about Maison Plus.
Oh, absolutely. So important.
It's a lovely French word.
Yes.
So what it means is to get everything prepared and organized before. If you're going to basically every soup almost and every stew needs a mirepoix. What's a mirepoix? That lovely French word. excuse me. Is carrot, celery, and onion.
Yeah.
Now have that ready. Have it chopped up and ready before you start.
Yeah.
And whether you buy it already chopped or you're chopping it yourself, get that organized and get that in front of you. And get everything ready.
Yeah. So for me, the mise en place, besides the cut up vegetables and stuff, is making sure that you've got all your ingredients.
Correct.
So even your spices.
Yes.
Is just so important. And it's just
almost like a cookery show. Almost like a demonstration.
Yes.
Get everything ready and just boom,
instead
boom,
of
boom,
running
boom.
Around. And my other thing is cleaning as you go. Whether you have domestic help or not, even if it just means taking it to the sink, that's fine. But keep your surface clean as possible. I have a little square metal, I don't want to call it a bin, but it's like a bag holder. And I take my checkers bag and I stick it in there. And then as I'm prepping and cutting, the peels go straight in there. Whether you are composting or not, putting your rubbish into the packet straight away. As you're cooking, just keeping your surface clean. It contains your stress of cooking, especially if you're a new cook.
If you're able to, make sure that your basin is next to your
table. If you have a kitchen, they can do that.
And you've got a dustbin underneath.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's our work. And there's three spaces.
Yeah.
Tabletop, water, sink.
I'm Adrian Bugatti, and I'm talking to Sharon Lurie, and we're just helping you get started for the year. So like I said, you've got your dustbin like underneath mine, fits on my table. I learned it kind of from the chefs that I've worked with in the different lodges, is they've always got a bowl that is their scrap bowl.
Yes.
For them, it's mostly because a lot of the game lodges recycle, so all the scraps go into the compost. And then they've got a separate one for the plastics and stuff like that.
Yes.
But for me, it's just to have it handy. I don't have it like low down. I have it on my counter and it's in a plastic bag. So when I'm done, I just tie the bag up and into the bin. But definitely cleaning as you go, wiping your surfaces down. Like it's just so important.
Very important.
Now I've got I was able to have my kitchen facelifted, let's put it this way. It's not a new kitchen, it's just a facelifted kitchen, and we rearranged it slightly, and I have not more space, but it feels like more space. And I wasn't able to get the basin, which was what I wanted, onto my center counter. What I did get was plugs, which I love.
Yes, very important.
And it just to make your life easier to have one central place where you can just cover it and just work on it. I often put newspaper down, especially if I know I've got something that's going to be very messy while I'm prepping.
Yeah.
Like lots of juices running. Because
then
I can lift
all your peels. I peel them paper.
And then you just wrap it up. The other thing is, a little tip is, if you don't want your cutting boards to move around, you lift yours up on a wooden board, but you can take a damp piece of paper towel or even a dishcloth. Put it on the counter and put your board on that, and your board stays still. It doesn't run all over the tabletop. So that's going to help you a lot.
Right.
And then
with regard to just one little tip that I actually have is, when you're cooking a stew or whatever, it's I put a little bowl, not a bowl, a little, I don't know, cup.
Yeah.
And I have about, just cheap, 6 little teaspoons in there.
Oh, absolutely.
And as I go along, I like taste, you know.
It's a little cup with water in it.
I put water
in. Okay. I put a bit of water with some dishwashing soap so that I can just, my spoon gets cleaned when I dip it back in.
Yeah. But I just take one spoon out and then I put in, use a fresh spoon again.
Yeah.
And a little teaspoon. And it really helps.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Having
to taste as you build your spices.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Because you do build during your cooking.
Yeah.
You can't just.
And also another tip is. Mm. Especially if you've got things out on counters and you have a gas stove, make sure that you wash everything. Even if you don't have a gas stove, make sure that you wash before because you never know what crawls over it or under it or in it the night before or the day before, whatever. And just rinse it.
Yeah.
It's so easy. And then, you know.
Yeah, no, I do. Because, I mean, and that I learned also from the chefs, but years ago, is they would take something out. I mean, they're cooking every day. They've washed it every day. But they would take something out of the holder or whatever it is and rinse it before they used it again.
Right.
Specifically for that reason, you don't know during the night. Yes. You know, and I mean, I like to assume that my cat doesn't go on a counter, but I have seen her on there once or twice. She does know that she's not supposed to because if I walk in and she is on the counter, she jumps off immediately. So she does know. But the other day I came in and she was busy studying a moth that was outside the kitchen window. So she's sitting right on the stove. Thankfully, gas stove, so she can't get burnt, but still, you know.
Gas stoves are wonderful.
I love my gas stove. Okay,
but there's one drawback. There's a film.
Everywhere.
Which is, but if you use meths,
yeah.
you clean that film off and you're okay.
So this is, you know, I mean, that's been the best for me. Unfortunately, mine is starting now. The guy said, like, my middle plate doesn't go on as the burner, doesn't burn as high as it should. And he said to me, your stove is old. We would have to replace the whole thing. They couldn't just replace one part. And I went, yeah, don't worry about it. we'll live without it. I have so far. But it's important to understand that when you're in your kitchen, the first thing you do when you walk in and it's my thing is I wipe down the counters. I might be just going to make tea.
Yeah.
But where I'm working gets cleaned down before I even start. And it is a part of the kitchen where I do know the cat's not on there because there's no space.
You know, one of the first things, where if you had to look up on the internet and see what they say about hygienic and clean kitchens, keep your animals out of the kitchen.
Yeah.
That's rule number one.
Yeah.
on everything. Keep those pets out of the
where
kitchen.
Where was I the other day?
And it's hard because the dogs smell. Mm. Oh, they come running.
And mine is only going by smell because he's deaf as anything. So we keep tripping over him. I did try for a short while to train him. I had a blanket like right by the wine part of the counter. So he would sit there and he could see what was going on. And then he was out of the way. Part of the reason also for keeping your pets out is if you're dropping something that's actually not good for the animals, you've got to be very fast to pick it up. But if you're in the middle of chopping stuff, you don't want to have to put down your knife to stop and pick up a piece of potato, you know. And then you've got to go wash your hand because now you were touching the floor. And so it is an important thing. And I mean, I love my animals. I am at a stage where it is time for animals and children to leave. you know.
Okay, so before your animals and children leave, let's talk about some of the ingredients.
Absolutely.
One of the wonderful things about kosher is that you know that there are going to be no chojos in your food.
Yes.
What are chojos? Insects for those overseas.
No, absolutely.
Okay, and I think one of the most important things is if you see a little moth flying around or coming out of your cupboard as you open it.
It's time to clean the cupboard.
It's time to, because something has got into the flour or, you know what?
Flour in the fridge.
Flour in the fridge or in the freezer.
Yeah.
And once you have it sifted, I mean, you can even buy chicken flour now.
Yeah.
But once you have it sifted, which you can do at the Harper, you go and buy 5 kilo and have it sifted, stick it in the freezer.
Yeah.
And just know that, I mean, things, some of the things about kashrut are just so hygienic as well. And just so,
even from the time before they knew all the medical.
Correct.
So that's it. So my, like, if you're a big baker, then you can keep your flour in the fridge because you're going to use it very quickly. But for someone like me who uses it to thicken sauces mostly, it needs to stay in the freezer. Otherwise, it's an issue. I don't do a lot of baking. But the insects and stuff, making sure, like, if you've got, like, beans or lentils or something, you open the plastic bag, stick it in a Tupperware, stick it in a Ziploc. Mm-hmm. You can keep it in the original plastic if you want to, but it goes into something that's airtight to keep that out. One of the things is we do in my house is every 4 months, the cupboards are emptied and wiped down top to bottom. It doesn't matter what I'm storing, whether it's cans or not. And that's the other thing. So during COVID, everybody was freaking out about washing their cans when they were doing the shopping. Just so you know, I've been wiping down my cans since way before COVID because of the storeroom. You don't know what's in those storerooms. It is a food place. There are going to be rats and pigeons as much as they try not to. It's going to happen. So I've always, not soap and water, just a wet cloth. And wash your hands after your shopping. So this is Kosher Cravings. I'm Adrian Bugatti, and we're talking to Sharon Lurie. And we're now going to talk about insects and checking
your
vegetables.
Very important. Yeah. Okay. So now, today we can go out and we can get things that are checked. It's wonderful. And it's a lot easier. But there are different ways and different minhags and different
customs
advice
on checking.
And customs on checking vegetables.
Absolutely.
I follow the Beth Jin's advice. Okay. And you know what I found has really helped me? I have downloaded the PDF on checking vegetables.
Yeah, their website thing.
I laminated it and I hang it on one of the hangers, like on my counter, one of the doors on my counter. And, you know, it's just so easy because so many people say, oh, man, what do you check this for?
You'd be surprised.
You would be surprised what comes out of there.
Yeah.
So follow those rules. They're easy. Mm. It's not as difficult as you think it is. But if you think it's a putzka, then just go and buy ready checked.
Buy ready checked. Like yesterday, I really wasn't in the mood for, I needed parsley for something. And, yeah, I'm growing it in the garden, but I just was so exhausted. I didn't feel like cutting it and then washing it and then checking it. I just went and bought a packet. But the truth is, because if it's growing in your garden, first, before you even check it, let me just give you a piece of advice. Don't check it. Wash it first and only then check it, because otherwise you are going to have to throw it out.
Yeah.
Because you're not using, well, we're not using pesticides at home, so it's going to have. So if you can wash them off before you check it, you know, and then you do your soap and water.
And don't be nervous. You use sunlight liquid. People think, oh, you're washing your dishes and sunlight. Don't be nervous. You're going to wash it again afterwards with ice cold water.
So rinse it off anyway.
Rinsing it off.
And you're using the sunlight for your knives and forks. That's going in your mouth.
Exactly.
So it's not harmful. I mean, obviously, you're not going to drink it, but, you know, washing it, that's an important thing. The other thing is I love when I do the kosher training at the lodges, I especially choose strawberries, because most people, they'll cut off the top of the strawberry and then they'll just rinse it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not good enough. You cut it, you rinse it, then you put it in your soapy water and just swish it around gently. You don't want to go too hard. You don't want to bruise your strawberries. And when you take them out, you'll see what's left inside. And in the, do you remember at one stage we were told we had to brush those pips off?
And then,
you don't need to.
But
it comes off if you soak it in the soap and water.
I heard, now we can leave them whole and cut off the top. But
I still prefer to cut it in half.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. I know we can leave it whole. I'm cutting mine in half. I just, maybe I have a phobia. I don't know. I think it's just a worm once. I've found a worm once. I have to say probably 20 years ago, but I found a worm once.
Tried figs, chicken figs.
Oh, no.
Those little fibers. You think that they're all worms.
Yeah, it's very hard. And I love figs. So it's a bit of a bit of a letdown for me. You know, I've got to be really, really craving them before I'll buy it because it is so difficult to check. Things like mint.
Right.
Definitely buy checked because those are also difficult. If you don't have the thrip cloths, they are very difficult to check because of those tiny little veins. We're learning, like for me, like once again, I've got the leaves growing in the garden. So having to check, I've got to go back to the old ways because the insects do burrow. Even in, I mean, our baby spinach didn't turn out so baby. We picked it a little late, so the leaves were quite large, and you do have to be careful with checking.
A message has just come through. I don't know if we've got time.
Yeah.
Thank you, Karen. She says, please share your chicken soup recipe.
Yes, yes. The quick chicken soup when recipe.
I know which Karen it is. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Karen, let's quickly do that. All right, because we're tired of herbs now.
Yeah.
We're tired of checking them. Okay, so this is, now I've got to try and remember this because, you just asked me now. So, okay, the most important thing I have found with cooking chicken soup is that you don't have to use that old hen that we used to use in the olden days. We can get beautiful carcasses now, and they're all out there on the shelves, and I use about 5 or 6 carcasses.
Yeah.
And they're not expensive. They're
like 30 rand
each maximum. Mm. Okay. And what you'll need is a mirepoix again. There's my French coming out. Okay. So you'll need carrots chopped and onions chopped and celery. About 4 or 6 celery to 2 onions and I'd say 2 or 3 big carrots. Chop them up. The flavor will come out. But the most important thing is fry in a teeny bit of oil, fry your carcasses.
Yes.
It gives that beautiful caramelization, that lovely brown.
Yeah.
Then you can, once it's lovely and brown at the bottom, not burnt, because then you're going to bring your soup and then it's finished. And then you add your carrots and then you add your bay leaf, you can add your onions and your celery, etc. Then you can add a bunch of parsley, some dill, because now we can get cheap dill, which I'm so excited about for my fish. Don't put potato in because it becomes too cloudy.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people put potato in. I prefer to put butternut in. It just gives it a lovely, rich sort of.
It also gives it a yellow color, which is more chicken color. Looking.
Right. Mm. You can add a teaspoon of turmeric if you want to, but not at the moment.
No.
Then you add about 3-4 cups, 3 liters of stock. You can add a bit more and add some chicken soup, chicken stock. Now you can get the Imana. I would put about 6 of those in. Check for salt. Some people like to add pepper to their soup. But the bay leaves, give it a lovely taste.
Yeah.
And just let it cook. And and then you can actually put it in the fridge and take that layer of fat off.
You've got beautiful schmaltz.
Okay, you've got schmaltz, exactly. And then just strain it through a muslin cloth or through a strainer if your strainer is
small enough,
little weave.
Yeah.
And that's it. You've got beautiful, clear chicken soup.
So hopefully on that note, we have left you with lots of things to think about. So the only difference I have is I roast my bones instead of frying them. It does take longer because you've got to get your oven up to temperature and everything. And I do put ginger in some of my, a little piece of ginger in my soup. And my family don't mind if the soup is not clear soup. They are quite happy to eat the vegetables. But it is, the carcass just makes the soup. But we also use giblets and chicken feet when you can get them, which unfortunately you can't always get. My family absolutely love chicken feet. Ooh. It's ridiculous.
If they see what I've got in the soup pot, they won't eat the soup. But put bits and all that in. But you know what? you can also add, while you're frying the chicken carcasses, you can add like a piece of shin.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And that also gives it a nice, hearty richer
flavor. Richer flavor, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us this afternoon.
Lovely to be with you all.
Yeah.
Go and make your chicken soup.
Yes. And this was Kosher Cravings with Adrian Bugatti and Sharon Lurie.